Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
On Sunday, late into the night, really late into the night, our president announced the executive for the Government of National Unity, which is probably really more accurately described as a coalition. And it has been described as big, a bloated behemoth. And just to indicate how big and bloated and behemothic it is, 28% of the GNU members of parliament comprise the executive. So it's almost too much to swallow, but hopefully helping me to swallow, digest, and hopefully not spit it out, I'm joined by John Endres, the CEO of the IRR. John, welcome.
Morning, Sarah. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's sort of, one feels like one has to try and eat this elephant one piece at a time. We have the situation where we now have 34 ministers instead of 32. We have 43 deputy ministers instead of 36. And the amazing thing about that, surprise, surprise, is that there are at least two in every post, or there are two in every post, which is where the DA has a deputy minister. So the ANC basically has 65% of the ministers. The DA has 18 and the rest have 16%. And with the deputy ministers, this gets out of hand to 70% falling to the ANC, 14% to the DA, and 9% to the rest. I suppose the first question to ask you, John, is this an opportunity, or has the ANC really managed to somehow construct an artifice of power that will swamp the rest?
So I think the ANC has done really well out of this deal. I think it has avoided making too many concessions. It has managed to retain quite a lot of power and influence for itself. And so kudos to them. I think the DA has come up short compared to the number of seats it has in parliament. But on the other hand, I think its approach of going in quite a cooperative spirit was the right one. So remember that the ANC was facing a binary choice, basically. Mm-hmm. It was either to align with the radicals, as represented by the EFF and MK, or to align with the moderates, which is the DA, the IFP, and several other parties. And as the ANC looked out into the political terrain, it saw on the one hand the DA being very willing to work with the ANC, showing that it was willing to compromise, that it understood the seriousness of the situation the country finds itself in. And on the other side, you had the EFF and MK with very aggressive posturing, demanding, you know, finance minister positions, saying or placing conditions on the ANC under which it was allowed to negotiate in the first place, such as removing President Ramaphosa was the condition that the MK demanded be put in place for it to consider entering the government, or removing the DA and Freedom Front Plus from the government, which was the EFF condition. So given this binary choice, I think the DA played its cards well. It presented itself as the reasonable alternative, the non-threatening alternative. And so the ANC chose the DA as its major partner. So I think we made a good first step in this process, but we are at the beginning of a very, very long road with a great many obstacles, risks, and dangers lurking.
Perhaps just to sort of start it back and move forward is to look at the EFF and the MK. They seem to strategically have completely got it wrong. By the time they realized that they were best served by getting on board, it was actually too late. The negotiations with the DA were far down the track. 11 smaller parties had joined the GNU, and all the negotiations had gone around that. So when the EFF and the MK came calling late last week, they got nothing. They've ended up in probably what will be a fractious opposition.
Yes, so that's right. I think they overplayed their hand. They overestimated the support for their positions within the ANC, and realized only last week that maybe they were letting an opportunity pass by. And so we saw both of these parties approach the ANC directly last week, trying to make contact, trying to position themselves as a better alternative to the DA. But I do think it was too late by that stage, even though they toned down the rhetoric a little bit, not too much, but a little bit to try to get in. The ANC was not interested anymore. But at the same time, you know, whoever was going to be on the outside of this coalition, which in this case is the EFF and MK, now I think has the opportunity to differentiate themselves very clearly from this government of national unity. And conversely, the risk for the parties inside the government of national unity is that they will find it difficult to differentiate themselves. They'll become associated with the ANC, with the GNU brand. If that is a strong, positive brand that delivers results, then it's good for them. But if this experiment doesn't work out, then they will suffer part of the consequences. And the EFF and MK will be lurking in the background, of course, to to offer themselves as the more attractive alternative.
And I think we've pretty much agreed as IRR that they're very likely to end up with a huge amount of racial rhetoric coming out of this opposition grouping, which will have to be tackled. Just to look at the six cabinet portfolios that the DA got, agriculture and rural development, basic education, communication and digital technology, forestry, fisheries and environmental affairs, home affairs, and public works and infrastructure. Now, of those six, where do you think we can make the most, where the DA, as I'm talking about the GNU aspect, can make the most impact? Which are the portfolios that have the best, possibly offer the best opportunities for the DA to make its mark?
Well, I think in terms of positioning, the portfolios that have the greatest exposure to the public are the ones that offer the greatest opportunities. And here, home affairs is one department that every South African interacts with at some point. You know, when you go to renew your passport or get a birth certificate or anything of that nature, you are going to come into contact with home affairs. And that experience in the past has not always been pleasant, of course, for us as South Africans. So if the DA is able to improve service levels and create a slightly more welcoming environment, I think that is going to be noticed and that would be a feather in their cap. Mm-hmm. Similarly, the basic education department, every single parent, insofar as their children go to a public school, is going to come into contact with a school and thereby with a basic education department. So if you see improvements there, you're going to notice it. And the third important department, I would say, is public works and infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So I don't know when was the last time you went past like a court building or a police station. All of those buildings are actually the responsibility of that department to be painted, to be maintained, to be kept neat and tidy. And as members of the public, of course, we encounter these buildings very often in our daily lives. If you're going to get something certified at the police station or you're going there to report a crime, you're going to notice if the outside looks welcoming or not, if the inside is well maintained or not. So here again, I think there's an opportunity for the DA to make its mark. The proviso here is, of course, that all of these administrations are very much, I think, staffed by people who are ANC aligned and who might not take kindly to being told to change their ways by a DA minister. So that is where that's where one of the focuses of struggle is going to be, is whether these DA ministers will be able to get their departments to toe the line or whether it is going to be an exercise in futility and frustration.
Mm-hmm. I think in due course we will speak at length about the relationship between the executive and the public sector, and I think a lot of our assumptions about that may not necessarily, particularly the negative ones, may not necessarily play out, but that's for another day. Siviwe Gwarube of DA has the basic education portfolio, and this has surely, I mean, I wouldn't have thought that this was one the DA would go for, because there's an enormous amount that has to be changed and renewed and altered and kicked out and in every sense of the word. But they're going to be faced, as Sekile Ngobezi pointed out, with two particular problems. The South African Democratic Teachers Union, which we understand, is already gearing up for a fight. And the other is the sheer corruption that takes place in the Department of Education. It's huge. Posts being traded for money and sex and things like that. And given the how fundamental good education is and how much it's been lacking, is this... I don't know enough about her to know if she's up to it and whether it's... It really could be a problem for the DA. This could be one where they fail almost through no fault of their own.
I think it's going to be one of those departments where you're not going to see overnight successes. It is too large for that and probably too entrenched in its ways to accept sudden change. And so I expect that the new Minister of Education is going to tread quite carefully. I think there are some quick wins that can be registered, like, for example, finally overcoming the problem of pit latrines and making sure that all schools have decent ablution facilities. That's sort of a really basic thing that should have been done years ago, where I think a DA minister could achieve a quick result and claim the credit for that justifiably. I think when it comes to getting the rest of the public administration, and in this case also teachers, on board, there are two things you'll have to focus on. The one is performance and the other is integrity. So the performance aspect is, are people doing their jobs? Are they doing what they're meant to? Are they delivering on the jobs that they've got, on their job descriptions? And the second is, are they doing it in an honest way versus a more corrupt way? And given those two options, my recommendation to the DA minister would be to focus on performance first. I think, you know, it's sort of hard even for an unwilling civil servant to argue that they should not be doing their jobs. It's an obvious thing that you need to do. So that's where I would place the focus first. And then I think on the integrity side, I would move with caution, but decisiveness, but not as suddenly as on the performance side. You need to get the performance up first. You know, a system can bear a certain level of corruption and of inefficiency as long as it is performing its function properly. And what we've seen in recent years in South Africa is that many government departments are both corrupt and not performing, which is the worst of both worlds. You know, we sort of paying high rates of taxes because the money is being wasted, but we're also not getting services. So once you've got services, then you can start moving forward from there.
No, I agree with you. I think that the working on the improving performance has a certain neutrality that allows people to, as employees, to take their fate in their own hands to some extent. Because if they perform, one may be more forgiving of them in the long run if corruption subsequently has to be dealt with. And one can't underestimate the human factor in that, in being treated as an adult. And look, after so many years of Angie Moshekhe, it'll just be a breath of fresh air to see someone different. What my sense is that the one thing the ANC did vis-a-vis the ANC that was attractive to markets, or at least didn't have them sort of bounding off into the far distance, is that Enoch Godongwana remains the Minister of Finance and David Musonda remains his deputy. And now with Ashok Saropan of the DA as the second deputy, that may be a factor in keeping markets happy, at least to some extent. In other words, where the real adults are in the room, there are real adults in the room.
Well, I think in the ANC administration, many of the money departments have been well run. So the Treasury has been good. Ministry of Finance has been good. SARS, apart from the Tom Moyane period, has been highly professional. The South African Reserve Bank has been good. The Auditor General. So all of these departments that deal with money, I think the ANC has really run rather well, I must say. And that would probably have been the thing to startle the markets the most and maybe stampede them, would have been to change that, to introduce a concern, an uncertainty over whether South Africa's money would continue to be managed well. That has been averted by retaining Minister Godongwana in his position, which I think was a wise choice. What it also does, is that it provides a kind of continuity. So Asher Soropin will now be able to, learn on the job, so to speak, how to work in a properly run ministry. And that's quite a good thing. It provides continuity towards the future as well. Mm. I think as much as the current outcome has its risks, which are numerous, it has been useful that it's a sort of gliding transition rather than a sudden transition. So if I imagine that the DA had won 51% in the elections and had taken over the government, it would have been, I think, civil war between the government and the administration. It would have been, huge amounts of conflict and very little progress. And this sort of more gliding way of doing it, where you've got both of them in position at the same time, does open up the possibility of improving things incrementally rather than in a big bang kind of way.
And also the DA has the advantage of being able to draw on the considerable experience of Helen Ziller and people who were with her when she had to run a coalition government in Cape Town. They learned huge lessons, which they will be, I imagine, better placed to implement than most, or at least encourage cooperation in than most. What about trade and industry, which the DA really hung out for quite a long time, and obviously for very attractive reasons, is to move away from a socialist, communist-inspired methodology employed by previous ministers. Parks Towers, the minister, we've had him as the mayor of Johannesburg, and according to our inside source, he wasn't a bad minister. He's quite a sort of thorough listener, even if apparently not entirely ethically sound. But any sense of what he would be like as a trade and industry minister?
I don't know enough about him at this stage, but I think we know what sort of bar we're measuring him against, which was his predecessor, Ibrahim Patel, who I think played quite a damaging role in South African trade and industry. So if Parks Tower is maybe less ideologically focused on centering the state, on directing the economy, on localization, on protectionism, then that would be good for South Africa's industry and trade. So we'll see. As I said, I don't really have a good read of him at the moment, but if he's better than Ibrahim Patel, I think that would be good for South Africa's economy.
And particularly for this audience, a look at the international affairs, DIRCO. Ronald Lamola comes into that spot as a minister, and I think most people will be generally pretty satisfied not to see Naledi Pandor back into that position. But he doesn't know much about the world, is my impression. So he's completely lacking in the experience in that regard. But the real power lies with his deputy minister, whose name has suddenly escaped me, and his DG, who's Clayson Munyela. Dangor is the deputy, and that's really where the energy and the power resides anyway. So I think poor Ronald Lamola will likely be to some extent at their mercy by virtue of the experience thing. Likely to make a difference to our foreign policy.
I think I would not expect sudden shifts here. See, on my list, the deputies, I think, are two ANC people, Alvin Boortis and Thandi Moraka. And then Zane Dangor is probably still going to be around. I think he's the DG, if I'm not mistaken.
He's the DG, yeah.
Exactly. And I think there won't be sudden changes there. But what I do think is that, even if we're not going to completely reorient our foreign policy towards the West, what we may get is at least a slightly more constructive way of interacting with Western nations than we've had so far. And having just come back from a trip to Washington and London, people there notice that we're not sending our best and brightest, I think, to represent us in these very important capitals. And that is something that Ronald Lamola might do, where he'd say, look, recognize that Washington is quite important, so is London. Let's find some people to represent us who can explain our position better than has been done in the past. I think a lot of the tension with the United States, for example, has arisen from the fact that we've not had people in position able to explain what we are, what we want as a country. You know, what is the intention of South Africa? So some people believe that South Africa's government has been extremely hostile towards the West. And I think that's not quite accurate. I don't think it's hostility towards the West. I think it is more negligence towards the West and friendliness towards the authoritarian powers. But by default, that gets read as hostility. So if you get an ambassador who's, you know, a bit more capable, then it, we might get slightly smoother sailing.
Well, you made the point from that trip that I thought was most interesting, and that being that Americans are not particularly worried about our relations with Russia and China so much as really worried about our relationship with Iran. And this might be a space that a guy who's not as sort of perhaps ideologically driven as Ronald Lamola might learn, you know, might bring something to that portfolio. And then really just to look at the fact that DA leader John Steenhuisen is in the agricultural portfolio, which has been separated from land reform, which has been given to the PAC. And I'm not sure whether that was a sort of gesture setting the one and or to intend to really set the one up against the other. But A, how do you see Steenhuisen sort of identifying with the agricultural community? And B, can he run a portfolio like agriculture and be the leader of the DA successfully in both for the next few years?
Well, let's say that I didn't have Steenhuisen as Minister of Agriculture on my bingo cards. So that was a bit of a surprise. I'm sure he'll do a good job. I wonder whether this positioning is politically aimed maybe at the Freedom Front Plus, sort of to, you know, take a bit of wind out of their sails. So we'll see. I'm actually not quite sure what to make of this. I think you're right to raise the concern about sort of the dual responsibility of running a ministry while at the same time leading a party. That's going to be quite tough to do. And we'll see how they handle it. I think that's actually true for all of these six ministers who played important roles or play important roles in the DA leadership. And balancing that with the responsibility of running a ministry, I think, is going to be a challenge for all of them.
I think, you know, I know we've discussed and there have been some comments about whether some of the ministers have a more bureaucratic nature and hands-on, or whether they're more policy-type people. But I think across the world in democratic government, what you're actually looking for is hard work, a sort of no-nonsense attitude on the bad stuff, and just enough intelligence to really apply themselves to the job. That in itself would go a long way to making a difference.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's a mistake to require of ministers that they be technocrats. I don't think, you know, that is strictly necessary. The DGs are really there for that. The most important thing for a minister, I think, is to be able to lead the department, which means to explain to everybody who works in it why it exists and what it is supposed to do and do well. And as long as a minister is able to do that, then I think a lack of experience in the subject matter should not be held against them. They need to explain what they want to see the department doing and then make sure that it does that.
Just finally, I think one of the issues that's probably going to play out quite a bit in the very near future is the fact that directors general, who, as you say, are the practical masters of the ministries, have tended to have their contracts tied to the ministers that come and go. So certainly those six ministries will likely have DGs afresh to seek, and there you're probably going to get, I don't know, a tension between the DA and the ANC about what is cadre deployment and what is just good practical knowledgeable alternatives.
Yeah, and some of those DGs are going to be good, you know. So They've been in their positions for a while in many cases. Some of them are technocrats, know their stuff, and might work very well together with a DA minister. But I think it is going to be important for these DA ministers to implement a policy of shape up or ship out. So if you're not performing as the DG or as the management, the senior leadership of a department, you should expect, I think, to find a resignation or a dismissal notice in your mail, and for somebody else to be appointed who can do the job. So the focus really has to be on performance, on getting things done, and on moving ahead, because the country needs, it really does need a bit of a fresh wind in its sails.
Well, I think the sad thing for the mining industry is that their loss is energy's gain, because Gwede Mantashe is looking after mines and he's been taken out of energy, so except for petrol, but energy in general. So not everyone could win, I guess. John, thank you very much. We'll be talking about this for weeks and months and years to come, and I think we need to try and sort of alternate subject matter on shows like this just to keep sane. But thank you for starting us off anyway.
Thank you very much, Sarah.